Welcome back to Tumor Board with Hilario Anish. I'm your co-host, Anish.
And this is Hilario.
Today, we're going to do a deep dive into the topic of palliative care. And to do that, we brought on a guest, Dr. Brian Ganz. He is a palliative medicine doctor who specializes in treating cancer patients and even has non-clinical ventures into the space, including a newsletter and YouTube channel for patients and families, and artwork inspired by his patients. So, Brian, welcome to our show.
Yes, thank you for having me. This is really cool. I'm excited.
So, Brian, we met via Twitter, actually, and what inspired me to reach out to you was your newsletter. I've honestly never came across something similar, and I thought it was really neat that you were starting that, and I could see how useful it could be. Palliative medicine is it's a newer specialty in a formalized sense. And I'm curious, how did you even start thinking about palliative medicine, and how did you even get into medicine? Was it something that you thought about?
Yeah, so I guess even as a kid, like in elementary school, you know, at the time, you know, people would talk about like, what career do you want to be? Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? That was just like such a common thing. And for me, it was always something, you know, like science and medicine and doctory stuff was just like my child brain always liked that stuff. And then, you know, as you progress and I, you know, went to high school and it all became more serious, I started to consider it, you know, like, could I become a doctor? You know, and I like science, I like biology, you know. I watched a lot of Scrubs, which you know, maybe like
Scrubs was the more of the realistic of the doctor shows, right?
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah. There was like a Reddit thread. I feel like there's always Reddit threads every so often on, right. You know, what is like the best medical show? And it's always like Scrubs is the most accurate.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I definitely gravitated towards medicine for a variety of reasons. It's very like cognitively demanding. It's like you know, you're kind of like using a whole variety of skill sets. And I always like really dynamic processes where you're using like a lot of skills at once. So I really like medicine. And before I went to medical school, I did 2 years at UPenn doing clinical research just to dip my toes in the water. And I was telling myself, you know, I'll work with a cardiologist. I'll see if I like that. And I love the cardiologist fellows I work with a lot. And, you know, they definitely sold me on a career in medicine. So fast forward, you know, to internal medicine. It wasn't until like maybe mid second year where I started to have more, you know, once you're not like worried about, you're just so, I feel like constantly worried about, you know, as an intern about learning the medicine and just like surviving. And then second year, you kind of like start to thrive a little bit as a senior resident. And it was when I could start like paying attention to the little things, the nuances that I, you know, started paying attention to the palliative care consults and, you know, the times where I was involving palliative care for my patients. And I always just marveled at the fact that they would come in and maybe have, you know, like an hour long sit down with the patient or longer with the patient and family and just kind of like dramatically change the trajectory of everything or like, you know, things that I thought were impossible, you know, palliative care made it happen. Like a good discharge, you know, clarifying goals, like treating pain that was previously intractable. All of those things were just like, they clicked for me. And I was like, okay, that's my calling. That's what I was meant to do. So that's how I kind of, that's like one of the, you know, I guess, a small summary of how I got here, but yeah, it was like a lot of things, but that's the core.
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, palliative care, I encountered for the first time as a third year med student on my medicine rotation. It really blew my mind. It was the only time I feel like I actually had a conversation about goals, like a real in-depth conversation about goals of care. And how did you kind of go from just deciding palliative medicine to then specializing in specifically cancer patients?
You know, it's always something that I had fancied, but I didn't know if it would ever be possible. Mm-hmm. I think it was more serendipity than anything, because I grew up in Southern California, like on the West Coast. So, mm-hmm. you know, I did all my training in Pennsylvania. And I loved where I was, you know, Lehigh Valley Health Network is where I did my fellowship. And oh my gosh, nice. The most wonderful program in the whole world. I love it to death.
Awesome.
Yeah. I wish it existed on the West Coast, but I was looking for looking for jobs, and Dignity showed up, and it was all oncology focused. And I thought, oh wow, that's like kind of novel, mm-hmm. but I really dig it. And I applied and, you know, got the job and moved. And so I think it really was just all kind of like serendipity. You know, the job was there, the market conditions mm-hmm. were there, and it just worked.
Right.
And so, and yeah, the need is there too.
Right. That's yeah. that's really cool. So you mentioned Dignity Health. That's where you work, right? Can you tell us a little bit about it? Because it doesn't seem like the traditional type of like healthcare practice, right?
Yeah. So I'm embedded within the cancer center. Like I'm on the third floor, where kind of the other practices are, like breast medical oncology is just, you know, down the way, and you know, gynec is there too. So so whenever the patients are coming in to see their oncologist, like usually they'll just see me like right after. Yeah. It kind of gotcha. It kind of works perfectly that way.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the role of palliative care. So just like a niche, I really didn't encounter palliative care until like maybe like my last year of medical school, when I decided I was going to do radiation oncology. So I was working with the radons and occasionally I'll see palliative care. When I started intern year, the patient came in and we start talking to them about palliative care. Some patients just have this misconception that we're giving up on them because we want palliative care to come in. So I guess this is like really a question about why do you think palliative care is so important for patients and families, and not necessarily when you're, you know, quote unquote, in the terminal stage.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really important point, which is the current understanding, like the like America in general, I think still equates or like conflates palliative care with hospice.
Right.
So there's still tons of room for education there. The role really is just to like support the patient and their loved ones and whatever their goals are. If their goal is to get to be really aggressive with their oncology care, you know, go down multiple treatment lines and, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the goal of palliative care is really just to like help them be able to do that, whether mm-hmm. it's by managing their symptoms, because I think it's really daunting to think, oh my gosh, you know, like I'm getting full fox and like this and that, and, you know, nausea and weak, you know. I think it's just so daunting to people that, you know, if you have a service that can like really optimize all of those symptoms mm-hmm. and like support them like along the way, mm-hmm. you're just increasing their chances of adhering to like a curative treatment or a palliative treatment that may give a patient like more time mm-hmm. and a better quality of life at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I think it really fits that role so perfectly, because we're all strapped for time, you know, like, we all have less time with patients, and, you know, hospitals are constantly having to deal with the same economic conditions that we all are. but like my whole practice is all based on supportive care. So, you know, I feel like when you're able to give that to patients, everybody benefits. They, you know, they're able to adhere to a treatment that they need or want, you know, both. If you could just like sum it up in one word, it's really just like support, tons and tons of support.
All right. And just to recap, what would you say the difference is between palliative care and hospice care? You know, I'll be honest, I sometimes conflate it too together.
Yeah. So palliative care is like the top of the umbrella. Mm-hmm. Hospice is just like a super form of palliative care that is reserved for patients that have an estimated prognosis of 6 months or less. Like hospice mm-hmm. is just delivering super high quality palliative care But because it's such a comprehensive benefit, like the Medicare hospice benefit, you know, really sets the standard for all the other commercial insurance hospice benefits, which like they're all basically mirroring the Medicare benefit. But it's a good benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, it covers a lot. It covers a whole team, a palliative care team that can come out to the patient's home and keep them at home. So it's all still palliative care, but it's like way more than you can get. You know, like my patients usually come to see me. They can see me as frequently as they need, but oftentimes like about 4 weeks when someone's getting active treatment is how often I see them. But on hospice, a hospice nurse could come out every single day if needed.
Gotcha.
And there's just no, like, you know, a traditional office, outpatient office visit would just never be able to accommodate that type of, it's like intensive care, really.
Right.
Hospice
right.
is like intense, mm-hmm. intensive palliative care.
Right. Okay. So we talked about, you know, that there's certainly some misconception, even within the medical community, between palliative care and hospice care, and what palliative care's role is in like a patient's treatment. How do you think we go about addressing this misconception? Because like, I feel like it's either the patient accepts palliative care consult and palliative care talks to them. But before, do you think this is something that can be done when someone initially gets a diagnosis? Or at what point do you think we can address this misconception so that people are more receptive to the idea of palliative care?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about that. and I think it needs to be delivered the right way. Like you kind of have to just like set it up and anticipate what questions the patient or family are going to have and what hesitations they're going to have. And you have to like know to address them like right off the bat. So I usually, and you mentioned like at diagnosis, like, yeah, palliative care can absolutely begin right at the very beginning when someone's first diagnosed with a serious illness, they qualify for palliative care. And so if a clinician wants to involve palliative care and you're going to like, you know, put in a referral or like consult them if you're in the hospital, I usually recommend that you kind of like frame it the right way, which kind of depends on the person too. Right. But yeah, mm-hmm. you have to anticipate that they're going to have a hesitation. They're going to hear palliative care and it's going to scare them. So you have to like, I usually will say like, you know, we're going to consult the palliative care team, and that may bring up a lot of emotions or, you know, worries, but, so you can like, just kind of explain what it is then and there, if you feel comfortable with the way you explain it, which is like in the hospital, I would usually just explain it. Like they're just like an extra layer of support. They're here to like focus on your pain and your symptom management. So if like, those are things that are bothering the patient, if you highlight that, that's probably going to make them feel better. Like, oh, okay. They're coming to address the pain. And I think it's okay if you like just highlight the thing that we're coming for. You can just say like, you know, they're experts in pain management and that's why we're consulting them, because we think your cancer in your liver is causing pain and they're going to help manage this. And then like, okay, that can be like one helpful tip that I use, or like, you know, guide people when they're like about to consult and they think that there might be that reservation there. And make sure that they ask you questions and just have kind of like your own answers, you know, if there ever is blowback or big emotions,
right.
You kind of like learn how to modify it so that people feel better. And sometimes that people will come to me and they're very worried because it wasn't explained in a way that made them feel better. And when I explain it, they're like, oh, okay. You know, like, so I think everyone can get there. I think it's just like learning all the different ways you can explain it.
When you've been learning and practicing with time, how often did you watch your attendings or kind of senior residents or fellows do this before, you know, you started to become better? Did you try and incorporate things that they did into your conversations, and did they in turn watch you?
Yeah, there's a lot of observing and listening in like the palliative care fellowship. It's just like core to what we do. So, I did a ton, my fellowship program director or the other attendings, like I love them all. And I literally took a little piece of them after watching the way that they explain things. And I thought, oh my gosh, that conversational element was just so perfectly crafted that you know, I would have just absorbed that. And I continued to do that all throughout fellowship. And then I stayed as an attending in my fellowship program for about a year. And, you know, that was just like fellowship year two. That's right. What it felt like. Because it's only 1 year, the fellowship.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, in residency, I observed and listened a lot to the palliative care attendings that got me interested in the field. And then in fellowship, oh my gosh, tons of absorbing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As radiation college residents, you know, we've worked with the palliative care team pretty often when symptom management, pain management, and we see the patients sometimes together. We're doing the radiation part, but they're also consulted for pain management or something they can do with medication. Also just goals of care discussion. And it's really kind of neat to see them at work. And I always feel like I learned something and I want to incorporate what they do. But it's really challenging, and not just in the oncology space. Like, how can you, as a palliative care doctor, or other physicians in the palliative care space, help other healthcare providers develop those skill sets?
Yeah, I think those skill sets naturally can be absorbed by others, but, you know, like the radiation oncologist or the medical oncologist, just by like having lots of collaboration with the palliative care doc. And like that's why I kind of like being embedded in this cancer center. Like, it's such a great like model. I'm surprised that I didn't see, you know, this type of job just like in other states, you know what I mean? Cause I think it just fits so perfectly, you know, like if you're there and you can talk to them, like the medical oncologists come by my office all the time and, you know, pick my brain or, you know, collaborate on something. I think that's the best way really to learn and share is like through direct conversations, like being like, being connected, because I feel like it's so easy to get like fractured and to feel like very far removed. But like, you know, if they're and they don't have to be like down the hall either.
Sure.
Because you know, when I was doing inpatient palliative medicine in my fellowship program, you know, the hospitalists would come by our little office all the time and
right,
you know, talk to us, and that's such a good way to learn. Is just like be there, talk it out, like and. You know, in my residency at Lincoln Awe Med Center, it was like old school, you know, like we would go down to the radiologist, like in the reading room, like talk to them.
Right.
You know, like that old school medicine, I don't know how long that type of thing is going to last for, or if that will just be like a remnant of our training. You know, I hope it never goes away because I believe in it. Yeah. I have just been that way of learning and existing is just so core to my being.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These strategies for collaboration, like you mentioned just now with the radiology team, are there any for between the palliative care team and other physicians? Meaning, for example, is there a certain time where you would want the other practitioners to come talk to you about a patient, like if they have X amount of pain or if something's complicating, because, you know, you can only see so many patients yourself. So I'm wondering, you know, is there a time where you're definitely telling someone, hey, just reach out to me and we can kind of help manage these symptoms together?
Yeah. I'm always telling people like earlier, I just like, even if it's just like, you know, the thought is only just starting, like nourish it, come and I'd love to talk about it. Yeah. Earlier is always better. That's definitely one of my mottos. And yeah, sometimes you are, you know, like sometimes a palliative care service can be very busy. And yeah, maybe they can only see so many patients. But then you still want to like get them like get involved earlier and like involve them more, because then that will help a program support, you know, more FTEs and their like the growth of their program. So like I would say never, you know, you don't want to feel limited, like, oh, you know, they're busy, like maybe we'll just involve them, you know, in the super difficult cases.
Right.
But in the coming decades, you know, earlier is like will still be better. Like that is only going to become more important, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I would definitely say the palliative care always made me feel better. I know it's for the patient, but they always made me feel better because whenever invariably we have these family meetings, when I do really have the time, I like to sit and just kind of hear what everybody's saying. And invariably, you get the sense that palliative care really, they have the lingo to just calm everybody down. Hear different family members putting their emotions and their wants onto the patient. And the patient is saying something different. And it's like, how do I juggle all these people's wishes, right? And I feel like when I was in an intern, particularly, like palliative care like made me feel so much better. And another thing is that in other specialties, even RADONC, right? We like to get into the mode of how we do things. So like if someone has pain, there's like one medicine that we always go to, right? Or if someone has like nausea, there's like we're like one trick pony sometimes, right? Where we do the same thing.
Yeah.
But then like you encounter palliative care people and they're like, oh, if you can't do this. And they give you like five options for like nausea alone, right? Or like five options for like pain control. I like to have like frequent occasional encounters with a palliative care to kind of learn something from that. But anyway, so that's just my musings about palliative care.
I second what you said. I feel like even just like the didactics or anything from our palliative care team is so useful.
Right. Going to another aspect of palliative care, you know, the kind of patients that you guys are exposed to certainly does have some, you know, emotional challenges with it, right? So often when you're managing people with terminal illnesses, I think that there can be an emotional toll, right? So how do you cope and how do you, you know, manage the mental aspect of your job?
Whenever people hear like that I'm a palliative care doctor, they're like, oh my gosh, how do you do that though? Like, this is so sad. You know, maybe it's just like I have a particular mindset of it all. So maybe I'll kind of just explain the way like I conceptualize things. Because it's the way I conceptualize it that I think is how it's like, so I'm, you know, I'm able to do it, you know, without it like taking more from me that I'm able to give back. Working in oncology has definitely taught me how fragile life is, you know? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, we're living longer and we're accumulating chronic illnesses over time. Mm-hmm. Some, you know, some people get all the way up to their 90s and they got nothing. And, you know, like, God bless those people. But, you know, for most people, you know, we're going to have more chronic illnesses and life is hard. And if it's a serious chronic illness like cancer or, you know, a rheumatologic condition or Crohn's or whatever it is, we're all treating those patients. And sometimes I think like, I don't know, is it any more sad? You know, if I mean, I guess like when you become closer to the prospect of death, I think you're going to have different emotions there than, you know, living with a chronic illness. But then dealing with a chronic illness, like a severe chronic illness for a long period of time, you know, can be just as difficult as having like a cancer,
right.
So it's like, you know, and not all of my patients are dying either. Because we are getting more, like we're getting involved a lot earlier, you know, like when we're involved really early, we're just kind of like another member of the, you know, like I'm like a cardiologist or, you know, I mean, we all play our parts. So, you know, it certainly it's sad, you know, when someone is approaching the end of life. And I think I've just become very good at like guarding my own heart and my own emotions, right? I've learned not to give more than I can give. You know, making sure that I only see so many patients in a day. I'm emotionally present in every interaction. And yeah, it takes energy. So for me, I just make sure that I replenish that energy, like the well that bubbles up and like flows out, you know, into the patients. I have to rebuild that. So self-care, you know, if I were to like, that was a long way of answering your question. So if I simplified it, I think the answer to your question is self-care is really important.
All right.
Definitely.
All right.
Is that idea of the importance of self-care, how you kind of got into the art and even the yoga that you talked about? I've seen your website. I got to say your artwork is beautiful. It's actually
it's fantastic.
Really, really great. It's really great. And I did read the you had a blurb, I think, on the page and how it was inspired by your patients and, you know, some situations with them. Is that kind of the origin of it, kind of being an outlet for some of that emotional toll?
Yeah, it's definitely like all wrapped up in there. Because I used to like draw a lot as a kid. I would draw, you know, like anime, like Goku, Vegeta, you know, like great stuff, the Dragon Balls stuff. And like back then, you know, I never thought of it, you know, it was just kind of like fun. But when I went back and I got more serious, like, oh, I want to like do this just more regularly. Mm-hmm. I kind of partly did structure it as a way, you know, to rebuild my emotional energy, like have an outlet for whatever it is that I'm feeling.
Right.
I think art is such a good way to express, you know, your emotions and things that there are just things that cannot be expressed with words or by writing, you know,
right.
Like, it just needs like I'll look at a piece of art, you know, that has a certain combination of colors and I'll feel something that like, I don't even know how I would explain it.
Right.
So yeah, part of it was putting my time and energy into something that's like restorative. I would say that's definitely like a huge origin story for like my art, is to like heal my own soul, you know, nurture it. And then like use that as a way to like replenish all that energy, because we're definitely giving a lot of it out every day. So yeah, I think that was an important part of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever shown your patients this artwork, or, you know, if a specific patient, you know, inspired you to make that painting, have you ever shown them that?
Yeah. I actually have printed out some of them, and, you know, I like put them, cause I use the same exam rooms, you know, so I like put a little picture there, and yeah, it's I like color, like kind of very positive, happy. Like I use a warm color palette, you know, magenta, orange, and yellow are some of my favorite colors. So yeah, I think that patients have definitely asked me, and, you know, I can see in the back end of my website, you know, with Google Analytics, I see all my site traffic, and, you know, I can tell when people really like stuff. So yeah, they've liked it, you know, but I've never made anything specifically for like one patient. It's kind of, I do it more of like general, you know, like what am I feeling this week or month kind of a thing. But yeah, when they see this stuff, they're like, they're always so enthused by it. And I was like, that's so cool that you like that.
Right.
Yeah. Cause it feels weird to like, you know, show your art, you know, like it's like so personal.
Yeah.
But I also think it's like meant to be shared. So unless you're, you know, using very macabre subject matter or whatever, it's usually very positive and happy, or at least that's my intent.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely comes off that way for sure.
Where do you see your creative ventures and your work as a palliative care doctor? Do you intend to kind of marry both of them and incorporate both of them in your practice? Or is that something that like you see more as a therapeutic effect for you, something to get away from, you know, the emotional aspect of your job?
I honestly, marrying the two together is something that I would love to do. You know, I think I'm kind of like in the process of figuring out how to do that. Which right now is just like having it on, you know, it's just like my weekend thing. But like, could this type of art, or just art in general, like weave its way more into like mainstream medicine?
Right.
Or like in hospitals. And I think there's huge potential for that. Oh my gosh. Like if I could be like, you know, part-time artist, or like, you know, like just like bring that to whatever spaces, offices, that would be so cool. And I do have plans for, you know, having like a palliative care, like inspired art. I'm just like, it's just like really difficult to get to the point where you're like, okay, with sharing certain parts, because I haven't shared everything.
Right.
Right. So yeah, I would love to like develop that, like bring it in. Because there are some like artists that are also physicians or nurses or, you know, what have you, that have brought art into the space. So yeah, I think there is huge potential to bring that in. And in the future, I think you know, just because I'm doing it like passively in my free time, there's no pressure to like scale it.
Right.
You know, it's like pretty low. I mean, painting is expensive, like more expensive than I thought it would be.
right.
But yeah, I'll just probably continue growing it over time and, you know, let it naturally blossom into whatever it also, you know, I'm like one of those people that like, I plan the big structure of something, but then like what it's going to actually look like when the brick is laid, you know, it's kind of fun to see how things naturally develop too.
Right. So I would say, and I'm not prescribing anything for you here. What I was saying, when I saw your website, I saw some of your art, and I saw that you were into yoga, right? In my head, it was like, what if Brian had like this like yoga studio where he just displays his like his art, right? And also like kind of does yoga with his patients sometimes, or like, or you know, they say on the weekend, some of his patients can just come to this yoga studio and the instructors there, but also get to like, you know, experience on the wall while they're doing all of that. That idea is just like something that was like a picture in my head. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's such a good picture though. I love that.
Yeah, it is. one of our satellites places in Buckingham, there is actually a nearby like a kind of like a yoga studio where people can also go do little exercises, but it's really for all the cancer patients. And it's actually like the community that like, you know, created that resource for patients that live within that county area to be able to do that. And I thought it was a very neat, approach to people who have cancer and like kind of dealing with, you know, life as a cancer patient. So let's go.
Yeah, I like that.
Brian, I'm curious, you know, as you develop this platform, your newsletter and your YouTube channel, who is the intended audience for that? And what do you hope to convey?
Yeah, you know, I struggled a lot at first thinking like, who, that was like one of the things that, you know, kept me from like starting the process. Like, okay, who am I doing this for? Which is kind of like the same question any, you know, anyone that's doing something entrepreneurial has to figure out, like, who's your audience? Like, who are you talking to? And I think I settled on talking to like the patient and their loved ones, just family. It's just like what I, you know, it's what I do on a daily basis, and I like doing it. So I figured like, why not do it that way? But then I do want to have content that's made specifically for like radiation oncology fellows or like palliative care fellows, medicine residents. Cause that's something that I definitely looked for stuff like that when I was in fellowship, and I didn't find it. So, you know, I don't know that anyone's done it yet. So, you know, I'd like to also do that. But for now, the way I'm like planning on building it is mostly like for honest people like my parents. You know, my dad keeps telling me like, you should do yoga for seniors. Like, it'd be so like perfect. And
yeah.
And it's like, perfect. Yeah. So, cool. You know, but it's like hard because, you know, you have to make things accessible. You have to explain things because we're so, you know, we learn all this medicalese in medical school. And then we just like eventually only speak medicalese. So it's, you know, finding the way to simplify things and explain things clearly and concisely is definitely the challenge. So, so yeah, that's my plan now, is to have like a very like clear, concise, like broken down version of stuff that I think would be very helpful for like anyone. Like, let's say you were just diagnosed with cancer, like where might you find something that like, and you've heard that palliative care is going to be involved. Like, so how do you learn more about that? Well, you know, like the cancer center websites, you know, like MD Anderson or cancer.gov, you know, like I feel like in order to like optimize content to rank well on Google, content has to be kind of like very generic. And I just don't think it's been personalized very well yet. So that's kind of like my goal, is to like really personalize things. Like if, what if you could talk to a palliative care doctor, you know, pick their brain like before, like what would they say? Like, would that be helpful? That's kind of like, I guess what I'm trying to do is like, what if you could talk to me, you know, what would I say? So that's kind of like what my blog /newsletter, / website. It's meant to be there as like an accessible resource that has, helpful, unique information that you really, you probably can't get in other places. Mm-hmm. That's the hope. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's very helpful. So just moving to like the last maybe segment of our conversation, wanted to talk a little bit about, some ethics and some of the future of a palliative care. Palliative care is in some way delicate specialty, or you're dealing with delicate patients, right? And so what are some ethical considerations or issues that you typically would encounter in a palliative care setting?
Whenever there's like ethical problems, like usually palliative care ends up involved. Mm-hmm. But like in just in general, I think the major like ethical like zones, mm-hmm. medical aid in dying is like obviously a huge one that, mm-hmm. it's gonna like when you think like what are some of the ethical considerations, like that's definitely is a hot topic. Some other situations that can be kind of like maybe like ethically heavy, mm-hmm. or when you're deciding to like withhold or withdraw life sustaining treatments, whether it be like vasopressors or antibiotics or mm-hmm. or intubate, mechanical ventilation with intubation. Mm-hmm. I think those are like times when ethical considerations usually come up. Mm-hmm. And of course there are, like cases, like historical cases, precedent setting cases like Terry Schiavo or, what are some other ones? There are definitely some other ones out there.
Right.
I've got a book on like one of my palliative care books is just on, the ethics and legal side of things. So, that's mm-hmm. definitely, there's definitely ethical considerations that are really important to the practice of, palliative care. But they don't come up as frequently. I mean, I feel like there's like smaller scale ones that, anytime you're in an intensive care unit, you're going to be dealing with like heavy stuff, mm-hmm. ethical considerations are always going to come up. But I feel like a lot of times most physicians are pretty well equipped to deal with some of those.
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like United States obviously is a very diverse country. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but historically, medicine hasn't been a place where there's a lot of consideration for different cultures. For example, like if you do dermatology, right, in the United States, a lot of our textbooks just show like white people's skin, right? To show different kinds of rashes, for example, right? What do you think the field of palliative care can improve on when it comes to talking to people of different cultures and really understanding what their cultural context is to be able to talk there?
Yeah, I think palliative care is definitely a wonderful service line to involve whenever anyone feels like it is challenging or difficult to deliver really culturally sensitive care because I feel like there's just so much like sensitivity and communication and, attention to the emotional space with palliative care that oftentimes we can kind of like help navigate, like culturally sensitive or just like navigate cases where, we want to provide really culturally sensitive care. And just because we spend so much time with the patient and their family, I've always offered to the patient or their family that they can ask me every single question they have. And I'll literally sit there until they've got no more questions. Everything is clear or they're, maybe if they've expended their emotional energy and they cannot continue that day, I'm like there the next day. So like when it comes to like, being more culturally sensitive and finding better ways to take care of people of different cultures. Palliative care, I feel, has a lot to offer because if you communicate with people, you're going to figure out what their needs and their wants are. Okay. So I think that's really the key is like, are we giving, you know, everyone enough time? Like if someone does have a very, very different cultural background, like, you know, maybe their approach to end of life is very different from like the typical norm in America. The way that you're going to find that out is by having a really good conversation with them and like, and helping the patient or their family to, you know, to discover what it is they want and they need. Like that needs time and conversation. So yeah, I think like conversation and time is really that element that palliative care can bring to help everyone find the best ways to navigate, you know, people of different culture and whatever their needs are.
Gotcha. So let's talk about the future, right? How do you see the field of palliative care evolving in the future? And what kind of things do you hope to see in palliative care? So where do you think it's going and what do you want it to go?
You know, I think it is going to go the way, like in my head where I want it to go, I kind of like see it on the path. So that's good. I think those two paths are kind of aligned. So where I want it to go, you know, and where I see it going is, you know, obviously expanding and getting bigger, which is definitely happening. I see a lot of places are growing their palliative care programs and adding FTEs and, you know, building up volume. I can't remember the exact statistics. The last time I checked the Center to Advance Palliative Care's website, they track a lot of stats and are a wonderful resource for all this stuff. But yeah, places are definitely growing and getting bigger. And that kind of needs to happen because, you know, like my parents, you know, like my dad today is my dad's birthday actually.
Oh, I thought we said happy birthday.
No, happy birthday.
Yeah. So, you know, he's like getting ready to start Medicare and navigating all of that. You know, so that's most of the country now. They're all going to be huge. Amount of our population is about to get their welcome to Medicare letters. And, you know, so, and they're all going to be living longer. You know, like my dad had prostate cancer and, you know, was treated with curative intent and, you know, is doing great now. So that's, you know, the need for this specialty, I think is only going to grow. So we're going to need to continue to grow to meet that demand.
Right.
But we're also going to have to do that in, you know, the challenging economic times that we're in. You know, the federal fund rate is increasing. Hospitals are, you know, increasingly feeling that financial pressure. And we're going to have to continue to expand in these challenging times. So that's one thing. And then, you know, kind of on the lines of what we were talking about earlier, getting involved earlier, I would love to see palliative care really brought in, you know, earlier in the process than most people think, but maybe not as early as I would want, you know. I mean, I would love to see every cancer patient, but there's going to be like some point when it, you know, makes a lot of sense. But so maybe it is, you know, closer to the diagnosis. And so I think we're going to have to find where that, I don't know exactly where that point is. But we'll need to, you know, grow to the point where we can really be involved a lot earlier. And I would love to see hospice expand a bit more. Like for children that are diagnosed with cancer, they can receive concurrent hospice and like treatment that has like disease targeted treatments. So like chemo plus hospice, they can get that, but not for adults. So would I love to see that? I think I would love to see that. I'd love for all of our cancer patients to get hospice,
right?
You know, but that would then hospice would really need to be redefined, I think.
Right.
But there's only, you know, financial concern, you know, this is the government we're talking about.
Right.
Like, so, you know, I don't know if I'll get anything I want.
Right.
Okay. But before we go, I do want to ask you, you know, as we go through our medical training, I can recall specific moments in my training that I've been proud when I was able to accomplish. Uh-huh. What has been your biggest personal success as part of being a practicing palliative care provider? Has there been a moment where, you know, you felt like you were very successful, very proud of that?
Yeah. And I feel like I consistently get those experiences, and it's whenever I help someone, maybe just through conversation, help them figure out what they want and what they need. And when they have that like aha moment, or they're, you know, they have clarity, or they just feel very at peace, you know, like maybe they really wanted hospice, but they just didn't know how to navigate a conversation with their family, or even maybe with their oncologist, because, you know, they look up to you guys a lot, and, you know, they don't want to let you down. So, you know, I feel like whenever I have helped someone like arrive at their decision or whatever their, you know, the road that they want to walk down, like a lot of times they're very appreciative of those moments, and it like changes them, you know, and like they share those emotions with me, and they're really positive. So I like feel those a lot. So yeah, whenever I like get to help people do that, it's like, it's personally very special to me, because it's like literally, it's like life changing. So, you know, I think the times where I get to do that, by just delivering high quality palliative care, that's always really special.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. You know, I think Laura and I will take a lot from this conversation, and, you know, thank you for joining us, sharing your kind of unique experiences. And I'm sure some of our listeners have at least some of their interests piqued into palliative care. And we always want to ask our guests one final question. And that is there any recent book that you would like to recommend our listeners read?
You know, I've got two books, and I don't know which one is better, so I'll just say them both. But it's Atomic Habits by James Clear. Has been like literally one of the most life-changing pieces of literature I've ever read in my life. And then Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss is like another one that I think is like right up there with James Clear's.
I'm gonna have to write down the Tools of Titans, but yeah. Atomic Habits. I mean, I'm reading it now. It is life changing. I think my girlfriend has heard me rave about it a little bit too much. But I do recommend anyone out there to read it.
So, thank you everyone for joining us this week, and please rate and like the show if you want to continue to hear more of this. We are on every podcast listening platform out there, and also on YouTube. And we'll see you guys in the next one.